Hello and welcome to the Local Government Chronicles News Roundup podcast. My name's Martin George, I'm Deputy Editor, and today I'm joined by Kirsty Weekly, our Head of Content. Hi, Kirsty.
Hi, Martin.
And Sarah Kalkin, our Editor. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
So today we're going to be talking about what next for Birmingham. We're going to be seeing what happens when you get dozens of senior council officers in a safe space to talk about what's really on their minds. And we're going to talk about a new levelling up minister. But the biggest news in town is clearly Birmingham. As we discussed on the previous podcast, it's issued a Section 114 notice, effectively declaring its bankruptcy. Kirsty, this week it's been the government's turn to respond.
Yes. So yesterday, the Levelling Up Secretary, Michael Gove, announced that he is minded to appoint commissioners to oversee a vast array of the council's functions. There's only a 5-day period for representations. And it sounds like the council aren't going to argue too strongly against this. The council leader has said that he will work with the commissioners and he accepts that they need to take some tough decisions to sort out the problems that they've got.
Yeah. It was really striking, though, that the commissioners are being appointed for 5 years at the outset. And I think the same thing did happen in Woking. But it's that's a long time, you know, that's through this political cycle and into the next one, during which time the commissioners will ultimately be responsible for decisions at the council.
Really huge decisions, couldn't they? I mean, you're talking about potentially selling off, you know, libraries, museums, all sorts of really key civic buildings and services, decisions being made by unelected government appointed commissioners.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way intervention works is commissioners will, you know, they hope that the elected members will take the right decisions as they see it by themselves. But yeah, ultimately, if the commissioners don't agree with what the politicians are doing, they can step in and override them. So, yeah.
I think a really interesting thing, and maybe it's another sign, Sarah, of the depth of the mess Birmingham's in, is Max Keller has been named as the, I think, head of the intervention. He's been a bit of a troubleshooter, called into other councils, but I think we all thought he'd retired from this kind of role.
Yes, he did announce he was retiring when he stepped down as commissioner at Slough, another council that has issued a Section 114 notice. Yes, I don't know. It's one of those, I guess, just when you thought you were out and they pull you back in.
They pull you back in.
Maybe one last job. I don't know.
I mean, maybe Birmingham was too tempting.
He does have history there, doesn't he? Because he was, is it right? He was a non-executive advisor when there was a sort of a non-statutory intervention in the past. So, yeah, it's territory that he'll be familiar with to an extent, I guess.
Yes, and that non-statutory intervention didn't finish all that long ago. It was only disbanded in April 2019. But at the time, that panel did warn that there were ongoing challenges. So it might well be that, you know, this is part of the reason for saying this is going to be a 5-year process, is that there has already been an attempt to turn Birmingham round, that the government clearly isn't satisfied worked.
Absolutely. And now, Kirsty, I've got a flag up for people listening. You've done a really deep dive, we've published today, Wednesday, about how Birmingham got into this mess. But some of the things you've taken from that, yeah, some of the problems that exist, like task and finish, and perhaps you can explain why that is. The council still doesn't definitively know whether some of these things are still happening or not that have helped get them into this mess.
Yes, I think the most striking thing for me when I started disappearing down this particular rabbit hole was just how long this has been an issue. It was 2012 that the Supreme Court ruling, which extended the time limit where equal pay claims could be made, and sort of started this whole process of needing to agree settlements with people who'd been disadvantaged in the past. So that's the sort of first thing. And the second thing is having watched quite a lot of the council meetings over the past few days, there still isn't an understanding of the full extent of the problems. You know, why this became an issue this year was that the council chief executive became aware that task and finish was still happening at a huge scale across waste services and other parts of city operations. That means that when people have finished their sort of bin round for the day, they can just go home, even if it's before the end of their shift. So that's obviously a sort of, you know, advantage that you can't have in other roles of the same grade, where you have to complete your shift. And because that is still in place, it continues to exacerbate the equal pay issue. And up until recently, the chief exec was being told that no, that doesn't happen. But they discovered it does happen. And when she appeared before one of the committees this week, she couldn't give a definitive answer about whether it had definitely stopped, because
so plenty of work for the commissioners to get into there. And now, Sarah, you were in Birmingham this week. You were talking to, you know, all sorts of people sort of who are, you know, civic leaders, I guess, not necessarily council, but institutions that make up the fabric of the city. What was the mood?
Yeah, I think, so first of all, to say that the event I was at was bringing together kind of people from the business community, people from the education sector, from the voluntary sector in the city, you know, all really key partners for councils. And I think just a lot of disappointment and a lot of real sort of desire to make sure that the narrative about Birmingham Council, Birmingham City Council, doesn't become the narrative for the Birmingham as a place, and, you know, fears that it would have an impact on investors or businesses coming into the area, or even for, you know, people, you know, students are obviously a big part of the economy and it might deter students from coming. So a real kind of fear for sort of what the impact could be, but also a real sort of, you know, a real pride and love for the city. So, you know, that was good to see, and people that wanted to support the council and help them find their way out of the situation they're in. So
yeah, so clearly, you know, strong focus there on, you know, solving the problem and playing their part, I guess. But it sounds like they really recognize the scale of it, though.
Yeah, I think so.
So then, just to move on a bit, people who are listening, last week LGC held a special summit, which it's fairly unique. It's a chance for council chief executives and their senior reports to come together for 24 hours and speak in a safe space together. Chatham House rule, so we can't name anybody or attribute quotes to them. And it gives you a real insight, doesn't it, into when chief execs have a safe space, they can really talk about what's on their mind, what's keeping them awake at night. And inevitably, finance was one of the ones that came up a lot. Kirsty, I mean, it sounds like, yeah. You know, what some people might think of as scare stories all the time about councils going bankrupt. You know, it's not, is it? It's a real thing.
Yeah. So we reported several different stories over the last couple of months about councils that fear they're close to issuing a section 114, largely due to pressures in adult and children's social care. And this feels like it was increasing. There were more councils coming forward and publicly saying that this was a problem. And when we were speaking to chief execs and other senior officers, it definitely felt like they didn't feel this was an overblown situation. To be seeing daily stories in their trade press about problems at councils, that felt reflective of what's happening in the wider sector. It's not just those coming forward that are experiencing those problems. It is actually happening right across the board.
Yeah, I think there was some, you know, very experienced individuals there who were, you know, talking about having a career in local government spanning nearly 40 years and not being able to remember a time when it was as hard as this. And I think we've seen that in some of our reporting of all the, you know, everywhere's got, it seems, got a very significant in-year overspend, whether that's just down to inflation or it's kind of spiralling demand for adult social care and children's social care, and the growing cost of delivering those services. It did feel quite bleak, some of the discussion around that's for sure.
I mean, just to clarify there, the event itself was wonderful. The event wasn't bleak. It was the mood of the people there and their sort of sense of where the sector stands at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's the sort of chief sort of personal attribute required to be a council chief exec is a sort of bottomless reserves of optimism and hope and carrying on in adversity. Because, there's a lot of challenge out there. Another one that I picked up during the sessions, but also in conversations outside, was sort of frustration around how the new sort of integrated care system world is working. So it's a year since that model became statutory. And so, yes, on the one hand, it's great. Local government is way more involved in health than it probably ever has been since the formation of the NHS. But on the other hand, I mean, one chief described sort of Orwellian discussions about how ICSs were going to balance their books, and this sort of overall frustration that one of the driving ideas behind setting up ICSs was that you could have more focus on prevention and population health, and that's just not happening. There's a real pressure from all the problems in acute hospitals that means that agenda's not really getting a look in at all. That was a big thing for me that I picked up from it.
I think actually that idea of prevention, that came up a few times, people saying, if only we could invest in problem X before it becomes a big problem, we'd save so much more money in the long run. And people kept coming back to the idea that the Treasury is not convinced about the case for prevention, or that it is worth doing in terms of the balance sheet or the spreadsheet. Children's services, again, it came up a lot, didn't it? To really intervene and help children before they have external placements or mental health support, all these kind of things that just cost councils so much, let alone the human cost. Human cost again, housing. Kirsty, that's another really big thing that you picked up from the discussions.
Not to be too doom and gloom, but yes, housing, there's a bit of an emergency I think we've been certainly covering issues and pressures around a lack of social housing, lack of housing generally, and pressures on council housing departments for the last few months. But it definitely feels like there's more concern about what's going to come. Definitely some of the people I was speaking to feel we've not got anywhere near the sort of peak of the crisis yet. The issues around having to move people out of borough because you haven't got enough housing. Housing in your own boroughs came up a bit, and the knock-on effects that has throughout the sector, as well as concern that if interest rates for mortgages don't settle down, there's going to be an increasing number of new people coming to presenting themselves to councils because they've lost their house because they couldn't afford their mortgage payments, and that's got a longer tail than some of the stuff that's been in the press so far. So it's still sort of looking at the horizon, fearing that there's a lot worse to come.
Yeah, and it's just, I suppose it's, this problem's kind of gone national now, I think, for London's been grappling with a lot of these issues for a long time, and perhaps some of the other big cities, but it seems to be fairly well widespread now compared to what it was a few years ago.
Yeah, and actually that was, we had one of the sessions, we had breakout tables for different topics, and the housing table wasn't just London, it was people from around the country.
Yeah. And the other thing I thought was really interesting, moving on from housing, was a discussion about regulation in local government. And it came up because of the number of councils who are getting into trouble and issuing Section 114 notices. Has there been too much regulation? Has there not been enough regulation? Has the regulation from all these different angles, and there are lots of regulators, does it join up? Does anyone get an overall picture, or does it have to get to bankruptcy before real steps are taken? There seems to be a sense that perhaps the sector itself needs to take a bit more ownership. I know someone was saying, you know, we all know which councils are in deep, deep trouble. Why aren't we as a sector being more robust in challenging or picking up the phone or offering support? You know, why is it coming down to government commissioners?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. But I think a lot of that stuff does go on behind the scenes. I think the difficulty is those councils that don't want to accept help or don't want to acknowledge that they can't cope anymore, or that the issues become too great. So I think that's the sort of the challenge, isn't it? You know, how do you, it's that you often hear people talk about the sort of the 10%, you know, we talked about sector-led improvement quite a bit at the summit, and you know, I think people, there's sort of a consensus it works for the majority of councils, really helpful and useful if you engage with it. But for this, the 10%, is that going to, you know, stop the next Woking or Thurrock? Not sure. But I think there was a really interesting discussion around the role of Offlog and what they will actually do.
And of course, that's the Office for Local Government, this new thing the government set up, which is going to provide, I think they're still saying it's going to provide statistics about councils to highlight when things might be going wrong.
Yeah, and I suppose somebody was suggesting, well, are they actually going to sort of hold the ring on and have a sort of view of, well, you know, because we have a housing regulator for social housing now, we have Ofsted for children's services, the Care Quality Commission is starting to do more on adult social care. Is there going to be someone that can, is Offlog going to sort of hold the ring and sort of notice, you know, this council struggling on a number of areas? Is there actually something more systemic going wrong at the core of the council? It'd be interesting to watch.
It's a question people were asking, wasn't it? And still no one knows the answer. We still don't know ultimately what Offlog will be doing. The other thing I wanted to very quickly acknowledge on the podcast is we have a new Levelling Up minister. I was looking at the stats for our website. More people wanted to read about the current Levelling Up minister leaving than the new one being appointed. Read into that what you will. But Deanna Davidson resigned on actually really quite sad grounds, health grounds, because of migraines she's been suffering. And we have a new Levelling Up minister, Jacob Young. Who wants to tell us a bit about Jacob Young? Don't all shout at once. Go ahead, Kirsty.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a straight swap. There's no suggestion that there's going to be a reshuffle in responsibilities or priorities at the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities. There's, you know, obviously Deanna Davidson was overseeing the devolution discussions that are happening around the country. And a number of those are supposed to be coming to fruition any sort of day now. So see, that's the first thing for Jacob Young to get on top of. And we'll see how those progress.
Yeah, I think it's interesting at the, I mean, go back to our summit. One speaker was saying that when it comes to both devolution and levelling up, the situation has been, was it becalmed, was the word he used for the last year. So it's whether a new minister, and it's a junior minister role, it's not, you know, cabinet level, whether this will signal any kind of reinvigoration of that agenda in the 12 months or so before the general election or not. We'll see.
I think the thing that might reinvigorate it is if they finally manage to pass the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill, which has got some key legislation in it, particularly, I think, Kirsty, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the East Midlands deal that needs the bill to go through if it is to proceed. But they are carrying on as if it will, because we saw Ben Bradley selected as the Conservative candidate at the weekend. So yeah, we, I think once the bill passes, there might be a bit of a flurry of activity on finalising some of those deals that are in train so that the mayoral elections can go ahead next year as planned. So yeah, that would be East Midlands and Norfolk.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, at the same time, or similar time, Labour has beefed up its own team that's shadowing the levelling up department in government.
Yes, so there's a whole flurry of new faces joining the shadow levelling up team, which is now headed by the shadow deputy prime minister Angela Rayner. She's brought a couple of people with her who'd been working with her before when she was shadow cabinet office, and a couple of Matthew Pennycook has stayed on as housing and planning shadow. So I think that's a rare example of continuity on the housing front. Sarah Owen has moved to shadow local government and faith. She'd previously been in the shadow team, but in a different role.
I think there's a sense, there wasn't, this was definitely a strengthening of the team and perhaps a signal that for Labour, this really is a key area. But I mean, Sarah, perhaps a shift of emphasis from the government's conception of levelling up to how Labour might approach whatever it becomes called if they were to gain government.
There's a focus on the New Deal and workers' rights suggests maybe they are looking at it sort of levelling up as a sort of living standards issue rather than what we've seen, despite the sort of levelling up missions in the bill, which didn't really come with any additional sort of powers or funding to deliver them. Levelling up has to date so far focused on some pots of money for capital projects rather than anything else. And I should just say as well, I forgot North Yorkshire and York before, who are also due to get a mayor next year. I knew there was one missing when I said that.
I did see you have a sneaky look at the big LGC map behind you on your wall to check where it was, just to let listeners into our magic circle of what happened behind the curtain. On that note, thank you, Kirsty. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for listening, everyone. Do look out for our other podcast, The Local Authority, where we look at a single issue in depth with real experts. And keep looking for latest news on lgcplus.com. But for now, thanks for listening.